Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Ann Hillman. Today's topic is diversity in Anchorage. We'll start with how the community in the state became home to so many different people from all over the world, and then dive into what that means for Anchorage today. How do we maintain our cultural diversity while also building a healthy and unified community? My guests today are Vivian Meldy with the Cultural Divers. She's one of the women behind a project called We Came to Stay, Anchorage Untold Stories, which explores the stories of people who were settled in the city during its formative years. Vivian, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Our other guest is E.J. David, an associate professor of psychology at UAA, whose research focuses on how cultural mixes influence psychological well-being. Thanks for being here.
I am glad to be here.
So, Vivian, let's jump in with your project. You're working on a new thing called We Came to Stay, and you're collecting stories. Tell me about the project and why it's important for right now.
Well, stories are always important. You know, I grew up in a household where we always, you know, whenever we had relatives come visit or friends, you know, our family always sat down and we heard a lot of stories over and over again. A lot of times, you know, my dad and especially his brother, who my uncle Granville, who used to come, used to just tell us stories over and over again. And now that they're gone, you know, I miss those stories. And then I'm trying to remember myself, you know, how did that one go? And so I have you know, and also being an actress, I'm always interested in story, and particularly stories of how people, when we started this project, we said, you know, what is the one question that people always ask you? Where are you from? What made you decide to stay here and make Anchorage your home? And so we took that idea, and Shirley Mae Staton and Angelina Estrada Burney, we decided to submit for a grant with the Anchorage Centennial Foundation, Rasmussen funded, through the Alaska Humanities Forum. And we put in for a grant to do this project. And we wanted to tell stories of folks who have come in from other countries and from other parts of the U.S. And decide to make Anchorage their home.
Great. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and look at one of the first clips that you guys collected.
All right.
This clip is from Martha Fair, and she is a 94-year-old woman who moved here in 1949, right?
That's
coming
correct.
Up looking for work for both her and her husband.
Yes.
Let's see what she has to say.
So. And me, I go anywhere because I don't never have to worry about a job. I know how to do all kinds of work. Uh-huh. And work was good for him, also me too. When I worked for construction, I trained a whole bunch of men. They didn't know how to do different things. And they are wise, was called me, some of them I met, and said, boy, you one person I got to see. Mm-hmm. Then my husband said, they ain't never saw a woman like you before in your life. Mm-hmm. See, I guess my brothers say I'm crazy like my dad. Mm-hmm. They say that she crazy. She'll go anywhere, nothing don't bother her, and find out. And I've did that all my life.
She's a woman with a lot of energy.
She's got a lot of spunk. I haven't yet met Martha, but we hope to have her at our event. And just watching her entire interview was just fun. And, you know, I keep coming back to the fact that she was here in 1949 as a woman of color and was, you know, like you said, she would do anything and everything to make money. And I think that's kind of an underlying theme with all of the stories is that that people came to Alaska for opportunity and for jobs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what we found with almost all of our folks that we've interviewed.
And EJ, you've done research all around the state. Mm-hmm. Is that a common theme for bringing people around the world? And
oh yeah, definitely. You know, I moved to Barrow too when I was young. But you know, so there's a large Filipino population in Barrow, but there's also a large Hawaiian population, Samoan population, Korean population, all the way up to Barrow. But yeah, but even with the Filipino history here in Alaska, I mean, that started really in the early 1900s when the Philippines was an American colony. And so a lot of Filipinos were able to easily enter the United States without having to go through the normal, you know, immigration paperwork because they were an American territory. And so a lot of the Filipinos in the early 1900s went to Hawaii, worked the plantations in Hawaii, the farms on the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, all the way up to the canneries in Alaska. And so, yeah, so jobs, opportunities definitely brought people to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And it's true for the Filipino experience as well.
All right. And a lot of people came up because of the military. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the next clip we actually have is with Alfredo Aragon, who mm-hmm. is now 104 years old.
Yes.
He moved up to Anchorage in the 1940s after serving in World War II, and he worked as a mechanic. And as one of the first Filipinos to arrive in the area, he helped found the Filipino Community Association mm-hmm. in 1953 here in Anchorage. So in this clip, Mr. Aragon talks about his work with Mayor George Sullivan's Committee of Community Improvement.
I got acquainted with Mayor Sullivan. I was the one who put the idea of a swimming pool
mm-hmm.
at the West High. At the time, there was no swimming pool at all.
I remember that.
And in fact,
it was approved.
I received a letter from him thanking me for putting that into motion.
So in that clip, he's talking about receiving a letter from the mayor for helping build the pool. He even talks about receiving a letter from the president, and his wife and his son are jumping in the whole time, and they're talking so excitedly about his achievements and his contributions to the community. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you learned from Mr. Aragon?
Well, you know, it's funny because when we sat down for the initial interview, he says, "Why do you want to talk to me? I'm just an ordinary man." And I said, "No, you're not." you know, and as I learned more about Fred, he was very extraordinary, and still is. It still is at 104. He's an extraordinary man. And I have to tell you about the swimming pool thing, because when I moved to Alaska in 1966, we moved from California, and my brother and I were competitive swimmers. So we had no pool to swim in when we arrived in Anchorage, other than going on the Elmendorf Air Force Base. So we went from swimming every day, almost every day for practice and for meets and all that, to absolutely nothing, because there was no public pool. And the pool wasn't built at West until, I think, around 1971 or 72. So as a student at Clark, there was a small private pool that was across from Rocket Park, Valley of the Moon Park, mm-hmm. That is now a private home. But we were bused from Clark to take swimming lessons for like 1 week or so in the springtime. But other than that, there were no public pools at the time. So I think that's pretty important.
Yeah, it seems like he contributed a lot to the community.
He did.
And he also talks a bit about forming the first Filipino association here.
Yes.
Do you guys feel like cultural associations are still an important part of Anchorage and in building community in Anchorage?
You wanna?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Just recently at the museum, you know, there was the Meet the World program, and it was great because you can go from table to table, and there were different dance groups and performances and booths, and you could learn about the different countries, which I thought was amazing. And also knowing about the numbers of languages spoken just in the Anchorage School District. I mean, well, close to 100 different languages spoken in the district. So we're pretty diverse.
Yeah, and I think, yes, cultural associations, I think they still play a vital role in our community, just overall, but especially for, you know, our new immigrants coming in, to be able to, you know, see familiar faces and see familiar food and familiar cultures and familiar languages, hear familiar languages. I think it's it definitely, you know, these cultural associations that we have in Anchorage, in Alaska, definitely make the state and the city a little bit more welcoming to, you know, the people from all over the world. So, yeah.
But it's interesting because I remember you telling me about one of your other interviews with a young Korean man who came here when he was 9. And
yes.
He didn't. Mm-hmm. He tried to speak mm-hmm. his language, but he was shunned and he was mm-hmm. embarrassed by the foods. Tell me mm-hmm. a little bit more about his story and then mm-hmm. let's kind of explore that.
Yeah, young Seurin Rum, who is a battalion chief with the Anchorage Fire Department now, arrived in 1975 at the age of 9. And one of the stories that he shared with me in the interview was that one of the first Asian children that he met on the playground shunned him. Mm-hmm. And he mm-hmm. said, I understood because I know that he wanted to be accepted and not necessarily associate with me because I was another Korean. And he felt like he wanted to assimilate as quickly as possible as well. One of the first things his older sister taught him to say was, "Are you crazy?" in English. And then the rest of his English, he said he learned a lot from just watching TV commercials. But he speaks English quite well now, but as he was raising his children, he started sending them to Korea, and now they're very fluent in Korean, and they know the culture, they speak Korean at home, as far as foods, you know, his wife, he has taught to cook Korean food, even though she is Korean. He said she didn't know how to boil water.
Nothing wrong with that.
But anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. And being a child myself of mixed race, my mother's from the Philippines, my father is African American, you know, people never knew what I was. And so it was kind of, you know, not necessarily accepted mm-hmm. By other black kids in my school. And I didn't speak Tagalog or any other Filipino language, and so I always felt a little bit cast aside, you know, mm-hmm. Or in my own world, and you know, it wasn't necessarily a fun time. Although I think I, you know, tried to make friends and just be friends with anyone.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's same thing here. I mean, it, you know, my work has been, a lot of my work has been focused on really trying to understand that, you know, people's experiences with their identities and, you know, the stereotypes that they experience, the rejection that they experience, you know, but, you know, so even though my work has been focused on that, you know, that's also a personal story of mine, and actually it's my personal experience with you know, stereotypes and being rejected by both, you know, Americans and also by my fellow Filipinos, you know, that really drove my interest and my work, led me to what I do now. And, you know, so those same struggles that you described, Vivian, are true for me as well. I, mm-hmm. When I moved here from the Philippines, I was trying to fit in, you know, I was trying to, you know, to get rid of my Filipino accent when I spoke English. I was trying to change my clothes, my mannerisms. But yet, you know, people here in America, including other Filipinos who were here before me and perhaps more Americanized than me, you know, were still kind of not accepting of me because they saw me as not American enough. And so I had to watch many Saved by the Bell episodes and read Archie comic books to, you know, further Americanize myself. And then I got to the point where I felt accepted. I felt like I was becoming American, but at the same time I was kind of shedding myself of my Filipino-ness. Mm. And I got to the point where I started separating myself from other Filipinos mm-hmm. who arrived here after I did, because I did not want to be associated with that anymore. You know, I felt like I just worked really hard mm-hmm. turning myself into an American, you know, and I don't want to be brought back there. I don't want to be, in a way, pulled back down, you know. And so these are identity struggles. These are psychological struggles that I went through, realized later on that is not unique to me, that many other people went through the same experiences as I did, and learned later on that actually has very serious implications in terms of our identity, our psychological health, and even behavioral health. So, yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit more, especially with your research. You said a lot of your research kind of deals with this idea of assimilating and internalized oppressions. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, earlier I said Anchorage is a very welcoming city, and it is, you know, and the United States, you know, overall, you know, there are many great things about the United States and the diversity that we have as a country, and here in Alaska, the diversity that we have as a state, and in Anchorage, the diversity we had as a city. There are many great things, but at the same time, it's not perfect. You know, I mean, you know, people here who are on the margins, you know, especially people of color, people who, you know, who may not necessarily fit the norm in every aspect, you know, we still receive messages from the general society that, you know, we are different and that we are never going to be, you know, a complete American. Like, for example, you know, a common experience, you know, today racism, you know, if we stay with race and ethnicity, today racism might not be as blatant and as overt as in the past, but it doesn't mean that it's gone, right? It's just a little bit more subtle now. You know, so things like, you know, we call it now like racial microaggressions. Well, you know, for the Asian experience at least, you know, people get asked, well, you know, where are you from? Which is a common question. And for many Asian Americans, they'll say, well, I'm from San Francisco. Or for here, they might say, oh, I'm from Anchorage. And maybe they mean that they were born here in Anchorage, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll say, I'm from Anchorage. But really, for Asian Americans, it's often followed up with, no, where are you really from? Right? Now, that might be well-intentioned, right, that question. But nevertheless, the question conveys the message that you must not be from here. Yes. Like, you do not fit people who are really from here. You see what I mean? So it others you still. You know, so those subtle messages, you know, that people of color especially still receive that, you know, that you're less than somehow, you know, it can have, you know, really a significant effect on your identity and your really psychological health. Yeah. And so once you start internalizing those messages, you start believing in them, accepting them, then you might turn into, you know, like the experiences that I had, which really what happened was I ended up hating my Filipino self. Mm. You know, and I tried to shed myself of my Filipino culture, of my language, and my values and my mannerisms in an effort to fit in. And I think we're, you know, now, as a society, I think we need to get to the point where we realize that we as human beings are more complex than just being able to, you know, have one singular, simple identity. I think we are complex enough that we can have multiple different identities and be good in all of them.
But how do we get there as a society or as a community to the point where we accept people as having multiple identities and multiple backgrounds?
We have conversations like this.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And really, acceptance is so much a part of it. You know, accept me because I'm a good person, and I will treat you with respect as long as you continue to treat me with respect. Mm-hmm. And it does. I mean, I think it comes to, you know, sitting at the table and having meals with people from all over. Mm-hmm. I just had a recent experience working on a theater project, Emotional Creature, which actually explored violence and very worldwide stories of young women, particularly young women who have undergone some tremendous amount of violent acts. Mm-hmm. And so this story told the story of many women from different cultures. And, you know, it was a Chinese young lady who worked in a factory making Barbie dolls. And it was a woman from the Democratic Republic of Congo who was basically kidnapped and sold into slavery and raped and impregnated. And but through all of that, I had this incredible cast of seven women, and it was a multicultural cast, and it just really moved me to see how quickly they became friends and accepted each other and supported each other throughout our, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And it was just a dynamite show, mm-hmm. you know, even though we were covering a lot of crazy, very difficult subject matter, it really was a message of overcoming mm-hmm. and moving on mm-hmm. with your life, mm-hmm. even through all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that it really resonated, and I actually saw so many more different colored people mm-hmm. coming mm-hmm. to the theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, and mm-hmm. most of the time, it's usually a mostly white audience. Mm-hmm. And depending on what the subject matter, I was proud to see every night. I mean, I was there every night, mm-hmm. pretty much every night. Mm-hmm. I was proud to see that it drew so many mm-hmm. more people of mm-hmm. Different nationalities.
And in speaking with the women in your cast, mm-hmm. I mean, they talked a lot about, like, the hard topics we're talking about, but they talked a lot about identity and how young women struggle with identity. Mm-hmm. But I think you brought up an important point, that you had this group of young women who are from all over and from a lot of different backgrounds who were put into this experience where they got to interact. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like within Anchorage we have that sort of mm-hmm. community? Do we have that sort of integrated community dialogue happening right now?
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're not having enough of that right now. So it's great, right? That's the idea, is for people from different backgrounds with different identities to come together and to have respectful, meaningful conversations and dialogues and productive ones with each other. So that's the idea. Mm-hmm. And it works, you know, from what you described, it mm-hmm. can really work. But I don't think we're having enough of that here in Anchorage. So that's great in terms of, you know, like on the interpersonal level, mm-hmm. you know, to, you know, learning it on, you know, interpersonal, individual level and learning about each other and combating racism and ignorance and, you know, a lot of the ugly and nasty stuff that is still in existing today. You know, but in addition to that, I think there also needs to be some systemic changes that need to happen. So, for instance, like right now, I think it's very timely. Here in Anchorage, you know, we always talk about how diverse we are. Right now we're talking about how diverse Anchorage is, right? Mm-hmm. And our school district, linguistically, probably the most diverse school district in the country as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's great. But if you look at the city of Anchorage, as diverse as it is, who are the people in power? Mm-hmm. Like, we have a mayoral election coming up. We have about 11 mayoral candidates right now. If you line them up side by side and you look at them, they do not reflect this awesome diversity that we are talking about right now.
That's true.
So who has all the power here? So it's not just, you know, diversity just because it's cool to look at, because it's colorful. We also need to think about diversity in terms of, you know, equality among all of these different diverse groups in terms of power, in terms of voice, in terms of opportunities and resources. And I think those things need to happen on the systemic level as well. Yeah.
So that's a great goal. Mm-hmm. How do we get there? Like, what are some of the solutions mm-hmm. for dealing with some of these systemic problems? I mean, youth groups or
mentorship, even, you know. Mm-hmm. I think looking at how things could work in the school district, you know, having people mm-hmm. who could mentor children into having that aspiration yep. mm-hmm. to run for office or to be politically empowered to mm-hmm. be active mm-hmm. politically. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But it's also in hiring practices, mm-hmm. you know. I still feel that there are times when people get looked over. And it, you know, Can I sit there and prove it? Well, I don't know. But, you know, from my own personal experiences in, you know, the many years that I've worked since I was 14, I have experienced discrimination in the job, or even just with, you know, going for a job. And now that I'm getting older, it's also age as well.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've seen it.
So yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? That's like the probably the question of our lifetime. You know, I guess there's no one easy solution to that. If we come up with it here, we'll win the Nobel Prize, right? but I think what Vivian shared, I think that's one big important piece of it, is I think if we have role models for kids to look up to when they look into the future, when they look at their role models, their adults, their uncles and their fathers and mothers and their grandparents, what are they doing? You know, because that's what's going to give them ideas in terms of what they can be. Yeah. But if they don't see that, then that opportunity is not for them.
Well, I would like to thank you both for being here and maybe providing role models to some of our youth. Vivian Meld, your performance for We Came to Stay is on April 11th. Professor David, thank you both for being here.
If you have questions or comments about the program,
thank you for having
us. You can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriter.